Despite the popularity of video games, friends and family still gather around the table to play board games. And our guest this hour will discuss with us the lasting allure and the new growing popularity of board games. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, January 20th. If you are looking for things to do to entertain yourself indoors during the next Arctic blast that is on the way, have you considered an old-fashioned game of Scrabble or another of your favorite board games? How about a newer game? Board games continue to be released. What are some of the best of the newer releases? What do you like about board games, and what board games do you like to play? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Brian Winter, owner of I'm Bored, Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming in. So you say there's a renaissance of board games. Why do you say that?
There really is. It started, I think, with the downturn of the economy about 5-6 years ago. People were thinking, I need to have a little smarter long-term investment in my fund instead of sort of dinner and a movie. So that's one factor is that people were looking for things that are going to have a lasting appeal and can be used over and over again instead of just going out for a movie once or and that's it. But there are a couple other reasons that board games have become a lot more popular in the past few years. First, you know, sort of the obvious one is parents are looking for ways to sort of get the kids off the electronics for a little while. I mean, I'll be the first in line to say that video games are great. There's nothing wrong with them, but all things in moderation and gathering together around the table to play a game and interacting is a growing reemergence of some fun. And there's actually one other segment, which is sort of young adults who, as sort of social media, Facebook has evolved from this new toy to part of your daily grind. Folks are looking for ways to sort of get out of, you know, of social media and socialize face to face and sort of reconnect and get together and have some fun.
So what about, are the newer games the popular games, or are the classics still selling?
Well, the classics are classics because they are always there. I mean, you think about the American sort of knowledge of board games when you think of, you know, when someone says, let's play a game, what's the first game everyone thinks of?
Monopoly.
Monopoly, right. Mm-hmm. And Monopoly is a fine game. It has some flaws. It's about 100 years old, and it has some 100-year-old problems. It's very racy. Suggestively so, but you race to the end. There are very few decisions in that game. It's very luck-based, and it has an elimination mechanic where you're out, and you have to go sit over there while everyone else finishes the game. All of those things together sort of turn into an experience that some people don't find really satisfying. And a lot of the newer games have sort of solved those problems.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I never thought of that you do, if you run out of money, see you later in Monopoly.
And exactly. Then,
that's no fun.
It's no fun. It's no fun to be out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so the newer games don't kick you out if you don't make a goal?
A growing trend of playing games or the sort of the newer style games, I refer to them as Euro-style games, and I can explain what that means, but games that have sort of originated in Germany and other places overseas and started coming over to the United States in the past 15 years, they tend to have some aspects that solve some of those old-fashioned problems of American board games, so to speak. They tend to be not about the first to the end and luck-based and things like that, but they usually are about lots of different decisions. You have a goal, victory points, or you know, acquiring something, but how you get to that victory point total, or how you decide to win the game, how you personally want to play the game, can vary based on your personal preference, based on reacting to how other people are playing, and things like that. So there's more thought, there's more strategy. It can be very light strategy, but still there's strategy, or it can be very heavy and sort of a, you know, big thinky game.
Yeah. So why don't you tell me, what are some of the most popular newer games?
Well, I would say that the one that sort of broke broke the wall into the United States is a game that I'm sure a lot of people have heard about. It's called The Settlers of Catan. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for in the U.S. for about 15, 20 years. It really was the first game to come over and make a significant impact on you know, people play this and go, wow, this is really different and unique. This is different from what I've played before. And again, it's because you have lots of different choices. It's a game that ends relatively quickly, about an hour and a half or so. That is actually one of the longer ones. It's one of those games where you have lots of decisions, you have lots of interaction, there's trading and there's buying and there's resource management, there's all this kind of stuff that happens. But it's a game that we call, sort of referred to as a good gateway game. It opens the door to this whole world of different styles of games.
Yeah, so once we walk through that gate, then what? Are there other even newer ones?
There are. Mm-hmm. Tracing the evolution, one of the other games that a lot of folks may know about that is very, very popular is Ticket to Ride, which is this sort of train-based game. It's got a train theme, but it's really about making connections, and it's really as simple as gathering color cards and trading them in to make routes across the map. And one of the wonderful aspects of that game is the goal of the game, again, is victory points. But how you choose to get those is up to you. And it also has some secret information. So at the end of the game, you have been working towards some secret goals that aren't revealed until the end of the game. And a great thing about this style of game is you sometimes don't even know who's winning until the game is done. You know, think about all the times that you've played Risk. And, you know, here's that one guy who's piled all his thousands of armies in Australia, and you end up rolling dice for the next 3 hours, as opposed to, you know, the game is done in an hour, and then we kind of turn over our secret cards and see what our final bonus points are and who actually won the game.
We are talking about board games and the appeal of board games with our guest, Brian Winter, who is owner of I'm Bored, Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your favorite board games. What games do you enjoy playing, and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, with that cold blast of air on the way, doesn't it sound good to stay inside and maybe play a board game? We are talking about the renewed popularity of board games with our guest, and we're welcoming your questions and your experiences. Do you have a favorite board game? Are you a fan of one of the older classics, or maybe you enjoy one of the newer games? We're talking about board games and welcoming your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We do have a number of people commenting on Facebook about their favorite games, and so far I'm counting a lot of people saying that they have a favorite, and that is Scrabble. That's a board game, yes?
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And that is certainly, it's educational, and it's a lot of fun, but if you play with my sister, you're going to lose every time.
And the same with my wife.
Yes. Yeah. And that is a lot of fun, but there is others who are saying Ticket to Ride is a favorite, and that was one that you said is a newer one.
It's been around for about 5 years, 6 years or so, and it's what we call, we like to refer to it as sort of the perfect family game. We sort of quip, about a Monopoly earlier, but we like to say that how every house has a copy of Monopoly in it, every house should have a copy of Ticket to Ride instead. It's got a very simple set of rules. It's very easy to play. It has good decisions. It has a little bit of mess with each other without an attackiness to it. It lasts an hour and a half, 2 to 5 players. It's my wife's favorite game. When my mom comes to visit, that's what we play. It's just got this universal appeal. It's a wonderful, wonderful game.
And Teresa on Facebook says that Apples to Apples is a favorite board game, but she says it's not really a board game. What is a board game?
I would call it more of a party game. I do call it sort of a board game. Anything that has to do with people getting together and having fun, around a table. Sure, it's technically kind of a card game or a party game, but it all falls into that same general category.
Yeah. Emmett in Black Creek is with us. Hi, Emmett.
Hi. Hi, Joy. Hi, guest. Just tuned in, and I heard the train game, and it sounds wonderful, but I wanted to say that Settlers of Catan is one of my all-time favorites. Have you guys heard about that one?
Yes, and tell us why you love it so much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I love it. I've been playing it for probably 15 years. We used to get together with 5 or 6 or 8 people and bring in multiple sets and make one huge master board instead of just one small one like one set would consist of. And then you can kind of change the rules. So we ended up going into seafaring, you know, add-on boards that they sell, and changed our own rules, made things positive instead of negative when there's, you know, options to change it. And there's victory points at the end kind of deal, too, like you were talking about the train.
Very neat, Emmett. And I know that you're on your way to work and you can't join us for long, but if you don't mind me saying, you sound like a younger man. Do you mind telling us how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 38 years old, and I've been playing it since right out of high school. And it's not as Dungeons and Dragony and weird like some people's you know, gaming things are. It's so much fun. Even my 7- and 8-year-old play with us around the kitchen table when the little kids are sleeping.
Well, thank you for sharing that experience, and drive safely. And yes, that sounds really cool. You can just kind of make up your own rules, Brian.
Absolutely, yeah. Emmett, he brings up a lot of great points. We did mention Catan a little earlier, Settlers of Catan. And a wonderful thing about that game and a lot of these games is it's very modular. There are many, many expansions for the game. You can take the simple, basic box and can have a lot of fun with that for 3 to 4 players for years and years and years. But if you choose, you can add these add-on packs, which will add either more boards or more rules or more stuff or more players, and how you choose to, you can have it as sort of big or as small a game as possible. Multiple sets put together into a giant 8-player game, that's going to take an afternoon or so. It sounds like a lot of fun. But if you want it to only last an hour, it's going to last an hour as well.
And this is a great example. Here we have a man in his 30s who's been playing this game for 15 years. He's not you know, maybe he plays video games too, but
sure.
This is very appealing to younger people.
It is, and there is there's also an awakening of game clubs. You know, as teachers who played a lot of this stuff 15 years ago, or you know, grew up with it, and young parents, you know, it's really become much more of a normal, quote unquote, hobby. You look at, I mentioned Germany before, you know, you look at sort of the typical American game enthusiast. And for many, many years, you know, Emmett mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. It's sort of been that sort of stereotype of kind of the quote unquote, the nerdy gamer. But when you look at Germany, you know, playing games as a family unit is something that you do your whole life and have, you know, for years and years. So you'll have preschoolers up to grandparents playing games together as just a sort of a normal family activity.
Yeah, and that it reminds me of your saying for I'm Bored, Games and Family Fun. You have a mission here: unplug, interact, and reconnect.
That's our tagline.
And
yeah.
And why did you make that your tagline?
Well, and that's sort of the goal. I mean, that's really sort of it's a mission statement, and it's as we are such a plugged in society, we kind of forget that some of the best fun is had around the table with, you know, some pretzels or some wine, and just interacting and talking and laughing and being people together, and playing a game is a great way to do that. It opens up sort of the shyness, and it gives people sort of this permission to interact in a way that they wouldn't necessarily do just sort of over dinner.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the Settlers game was a gateway game, and now there's a newer gateway game?
There are many that I love. One of the newest and one of the ones that I love the most came out this year. It's called Rise of Augustus, as in Augustus Caesar.
Okay.
It's got this loose sort of ancient Roman theme. Many of these games have a theme that is sometimes a little tacked on, but it gives it a little bit of identity. And at its core, you know, another good example of this style of game is it'll take a classic tried and true game, give it a little twist and make it much more interesting. Rise of Augustus is essentially bingo. You have these cards with a series of icons on them, and someone is going to take turns drawing these little, you know, tokens from a bag, and you have a marker, and you're going to, you know, cross swords, you're going to put a marker on one of your cross sword cards. And when you fill up a card, you say Ave Caesar or bingo or I got one, and that card is going to be kept until later in the game. Now, the interesting thing about this one is You know, bingo just sits there and you wait for your number to come up. This one has choices. You have a limited number of markers to put on your cards. The tokens that are in the bag have a distributed amounts of different icons. So there's more cross swords than shields in the bag, for example. So there's a probability and a press your luck aspect. When you fill up a card, it's going to give you some bonus points or a special thing, or you're going to keep it. And you're just going to keep doing that until the game ends. And then whoever has collected the most points through the clever use of their tokens and their cards and the way that they approach the game determines the winner. It's a wonderful game. Up to six players can play 2 to 6, lasts a half an hour. And it's super easy to learn. It's super easy to teach. And it's got some really interesting decisions.
You know, you mentioned a couple of times that there's a finite period here and a shorter period of time for the games, like a half hour or an hour. Is that because we really are time pressed and we don't want to spend hours and hours at the same game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a time when I could spend all weekend playing a game, and I sometimes yearn for those times. But I'm a dad. I've got a couple kids. They've got basketball and all that stuff. And when it's time to sit down, sometimes we don't have a whole lot of time to do that. Now, there are certainly some excellent, wonderful games that are very much more involved and much more in depth, and you can play all day long. And I look forward to those opportunities when I have that. One of the great ironies of owning a game store is I have no time to play games because I'm too busy running the store. But many, many games, especially these sort of quote unquote gateway games that I'm talking about, they tend to have a much shorter time frame, and you can get a game in a relatively easy amount of time without it becoming sort of burdensome.
Let's go back to the phones. Lori in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I understand you have a game you'd like to recommend.
I would. I was in Camp Lucerne this weekend and with my church, and one of the big draws for the weekend is game playing, especially when the weather is so cold. And one of the ones I discovered this weekend was called Quirkle.
Oh, yeah.
It was a great game. I played with a little 8-year-old all the way up to, 65, 70-year-olds, and it was a great game because the kids could catch on rather quickly, but the adults found the strategy in it. And then going along with the speed thing, as far as time, we decided yesterday, after playing on Saturday, to play a speed round. So we set a time limit for how long you had to make your play. And it took us less than 30 minutes to play the whole game because we're like, well, we want to go outside and go snowshoeing, so let's play speed round.
Oh, very nice. And I'll ask you, I'm seeing Quirkle right now. Is that what that is,
Brian? Yeah, that's
what
that is. Quirkle is a very, very popular game. In my store, it's kind of hard to find right now because it's sold out over the holidays, and we're waiting for them to kind of bring it back, to sort of make
what's
more.
What's the object of
very,
Quirkle?
Very, very simple game. You have these tiles. They look sort of like Scrabble tiles, and they're just different colored shapes. So you have squares in red, yellow, blue, and green, circles and diamonds and things like that. And what you're doing is you're laying them out in sort of a Scrabble-like pattern on a tabletop in rows and columns, but they're just you're putting in rows and columns of like property, so a row of squares, a column of green or something like that. You can never have a repeat in a line, so that's when you can only ever have six in a row. That's a Quirkle. That's going to give you some extra points, and it just plays like a type of a Scrabble-y type of game, but just more abstract. It's a great, great game.
And it's a game that, as Lori mentioned, an 8-year-old can play, and so can an 80-year-old.
Even a 6-year-old can play. Now, a 6-year-old is not going to have sort of those long-term strategies in mind, but grown-ups certainly will, or older players, I shouldn't even say grown-ups. And it's a game where you can sort of plan ahead three moves and try to get those sweet points, for getting those great Quirkles and things like that. For those who are interested, it's spelled Q-W-I-R. KLE, it's one of the classics.
And it's sold out.
There's a lot of the great ones are tough to find right now, unfortunately, because the holiday season just ended, and they have to sort of make more, but they're out there.
We do have other callers, but you did show me on your iPad the Quirkle board. Is this a type of game that can be played online as well, or should you play it as a board game?
I'm sure there is somewhat a knockoff version of it has someone put out there.
But that's not the same.
Not necessarily the same. There are, I've got my iPad right here, and some of the great classic games have wonderful sort of online or computerized versions. Carcassonne is a great tile laying game. It's a very abstract strategy type of a game, and has a wonderful app for it. But every time I play it, you know, I wish I was sitting across from someone, looking at their face and chatting with them and sort of watching them think about their move, because that sort of helps me make my move. And it's always better with face to face.
And it's got to make you feel good that Lori said that some event that she went to this weekend was that the draw was games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a great sort of, you know, let's all come together. It's easy to bring someone into a game. It's a great icebreaker.
Thank you, Lori, for suggesting Quirkle. Dan in Drummond is with us. Hello, Dan. Do you have some favorite games?
Well, there were two. When my friend Randy was alive and his girlfriend was up here, the two main ones that we always played with either Yahtzee or Monopoly.
Yeah, and what did you like about playing those games?
Well, it was Yahtzee. Sometimes you could play with two people and then or more, or same way with Monopoly. You could play with two or more people.
Yeah, and these are games, Brian, that you need two or more people.
Tried and true classics, absolutely. Yeah, Yahtzee is another great game that is, you know, everyone sort of cuts their teeth on rolling dice and pressing your luck and things like that. One of the interesting aspects about, you know, both Monopoly and Yahtzee is they have to there's not a whole lot of decision. You just sort of go down the list and what's my next thing. There are other games that will take that sort of Yahtzee and give it a little more decision.
Well, maybe after we check news, we will talk about some newer games that maybe take Yahtzee one step further and other new board games. We're talking about the appeal of board games with Brian Winter, who is owner of I'm Bored Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a game board expert, a board game expert, about the appeal of board games, from the classics to newer ones that are popular today. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, January 20th. What's your favorite board game? Or what questions do you have if you'd like suggestions for a board game? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brian Winter, owner of I'm Bored Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. And just before news, we heard from a caller who really enjoyed playing Yahtzee, he said, with some friends. And you mentioned that there are some newer games that are Yahtzee-like. What are those?
There are. I mean, playing dice games, he mentioned, you know, multiple players, and a dice game is really a great way to have really any number of players. One specifically related to Yahtzee is a game called Yam Slam, and it essentially takes that same Yahtzee element, roll the dice three times, try to get large straights and small straights and things like that, but it removes the list, you know, do this one, now do this one, do now do this one, and turns it, and instead you have chips, and so if you want to get three small straights, you can go for three small straights, and every time you get one, you get a chip that's worth a certain number of points. The wonderful thing about this one is it adds a press your luck. Do I try to go for the more points? Do I try to get those extra things? And it just adds a little bit more decision-making, as opposed to, well, I need fives. Roll, hope I get some fives. It's a great sort of, again, twist on a classic. That's great. You have other dice games that any number of people, LCR, left, center, right, is a ridiculously simple game. There's really no thinking involved, but you can add a little gamble to the game, and it makes it, it turns kind of a silly, ridiculous game into one that's really, really fun as soon as you add some value in coins or pretzels or whatever.
Well, we were going to talk next about cooperative games, but of all things, our next caller wants to also talk about that. So, Andy in Richland Center, what is your question?
Well, good morning, Joy and Brian. Our family discovered Pandemic, which has been around for a little while, and had a great time playing it, and we keep having a good time playing it. And so I wondered if Brian could recommend other cooperative or collaborative games, and then if he has time to address storytelling games. We had played Once Upon a Time and really enjoyed that as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy. First, can you tell us about Pandemic?
Andy has excellent choice in games. Pandemic is really broke open the floodgates for a whole series of cooperative games. It was the first one to really sort of take the industry by storm. A cooperative game is one where you're all playing against the game itself. You're all going to be on the same team against the game, and you're going to win or lose together as a team. In Pandemic, it's got sort of an interesting theme. You basically are all members of the Centers of Disease Control. You each have a special ability, someone who's the medic or the researcher or the dispatcher, something that unique that you can do during the game. And basically, you have the board as a big map of the world, and four horrible diseases have broken out around the world, the yellow disease, the red disease, and you're all working together trying to cure all four of those diseases before any one of them spreads too far. And the game sort of becomes harder and harder as you go along because everything's spreading faster and faster, and it's more puzzly, and you really have to all think and work together and say, okay, if we're going to get this done, you go here, I'll go here, we'll trade cards, and you really have to do work together.
I like that, because you are then, you're not playing against each other, but you're working together against the game and the bad thing that might happen if the game wins.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And other recommendations for that, the folks at Game Right Games, and some people may know Game Right Games, they make a lot of great family games, Sleeping Queens and Rat-a-Tat-Cat and things like that. They make a game called Forbidden Island. Now, what they did is they went to Matt Leacock, who is the designer of Pandemic, and said, make us a family-friendly version of Pandemic. And he made a game called Forbidden Island, which has a lot of the same mechanics, but the theme is a little different. You have this island you're all, again, you all have a special ability. Someone is the diver, the explorer, and you're searching for four artifacts on this island, and you need to get off the island to win the game once you get all four of them. The problem is the island is sinking into the sea, so every turn, pieces of the island are flooding and sinking, and your board is deteriorating as you go along, and it's the same general game, but a little, with a more palatable theme for younger kids. And a great thing about that is although the box says ages 10 and up, I've played that game with kids as young as 6 because you're all working together. There's no real secrets. You can just sort of guide each other. The same, that was such a huge hit. It's been out for a couple of years now. Big, big hit. And Game Right just came out with a second game sort of in that series, again by Matt Leacock, called Forbidden Desert, a follow-up game that is... that takes the same sort of concept, but now you've crash-landed in the desert, and you need to explore the desert and deal with sand, and the board is shifting around, and there's a sandstorm, and you're trying to get out of the desert before you run out of water or something like that. It's a great, wonderful game. There are many, many cooperative games, just about any genre, everything from abstract sort of fantasy like this. There's Dungeons and Dragons themed cooperative games. There are, a great one is called Castle Panic, where you're all trying to protect your castle from invading monsters while working together. They're coming from every direction.
Yeah. Which one did you bring in? You did bring in one.
I brought in Forbidden Desert.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's even better than Forbidden Island. 2 to 5 players. Again, a few more decisions. Some really interesting mechanics, and it's just a great game for the whole family. And it doesn't have to be for kids, too. It's even though it says 10 and up, plenty of adults play and love that game.
So Andy wondered if you could also talk a little bit about storytelling games.
Yeah, he mentioned Once Upon a Time. That is sort of the grand poobah of the storytelling games. In a storytelling game, the goal of the game is not necessarily to win, but to experience playing the game. There are certainly victory conditions, and someone can be the winner, but it's not the destination, it's the journey that's the entertainment.
How do you play, for example, Once Upon a Time?
Once Upon a Time is a card game, essentially. Oh. Everyone has a series of cards, and on each card is a sort of a classic fairy tale trope, princesses and keys and castles and ogres and things like that. Everyone has a hand of cards, and what you're trying to do is get rid of all the cards in your hand. You do that by someone is the storyteller, and you start telling a story. And you're weaving the cards in your hand, trying to play them, and weaving those elements into the story as it goes along. But there are ways for the other players to steal the story away and start telling the story and sort of shifting it in their direction. Now, the great thing about Once Upon a Time is each player has a secret happily ever after card, let's call it, which is how they want the story to end. And so my card may say, and the ogre was never seen in the kingdom again. And yours might say, and the king and queen learned a valuable lesson. So when it's my turn to have the story, I'm trying to weave an ogre and a problem, and you are trying to get a king and a queen and a morality play going on. And it's fun. Just a great sort of, kickback, sit around the couch and just see where it goes.
I would enjoy that. Is there another storytelling game that you could recommend that maybe Andy might try?
There's a couple. One is really more designed for kids. It's called Telltale. It's just a tin of round picture cards, and it uses the same kind of thing. You know, kids will draw a card, start telling a story, and then the story will pass, and you'll weave a new picture, draw a new picture card and weave that picture into the story and kind of see how it goes. Another one that is currently out of print but is due to be back in stock very, very soon is called Tales of the Arabian Nights. And this is more of a traditional board game, but it has a huge storytelling element. I don't know if you remember when we were kids, they had those Choose Your Own Adventure books.
If you want
to do this, go to page 7. Do that, go to page 13. And that it's essentially that kind of mechanism, but with a board game. And so someone is Scheherazade, and someone is Aladdin, and someone and all these sort of, and you're going around, ancient Arabia, and just moving from here to here, and there's a big, thick book of paragraphs, and, if you want to do this, go here. If you want to do that, go there. And you just kind of sit back and see what is going to happen to your character through the course of the game. Again, there's a game that has a winner, but that's not the point. The point is actually playing and seeing what happens.
Thank you very much, Andy, for the call. Have fun. Andrew in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. What's this game that you like?
Well, yesterday I didn't think I was going to get any gaming in this weekend because all of my gaming friends were busy and we were having my fiance's little cousins in the town. So we bust out this game that I play with online. People call them NGAs, non-gaming acquaintances. You'll have lists of games that are good for non-gamers or good gateway games. And my personal favorite that has been a hit with everybody who's played it is called King of Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in the same vein as Yahtzee. I really love this game. So you're playing as giant monsters, and you're essentially trying to beat each other up and take over Tokyo City and roll punches and beat up the other monsters and buy upgrade cards that'll give you flame breath or make you grow wings or give you a giant brain that lets you roll more dice.
Yep, I'm looking at the flyer right now. And Brian brought the game in. So,
King of Tokyo is one of my absolute favorites, and a great game for the whole family and for kids. I'd say probably 8 and up, or so. A great thing, what I like to say about King of Tokyo is it's effectively a King of the Hill game, and it's a fighting game where no one feels picked on because like you said, everyone plays a giant monster like a Godzilla or a King Kong and things like that, and it's just a dice rolling game. You're rolling dice trying to again score victory points or knock the other guys out, and it's got a really neat little board mechanism where one of you is quote unquote in Tokyo and everyone else is not in Tokyo, and if you're in Tokyo everyone is sort of beating on you and you're kind of wailing on everyone else. It's a very simple, fast playing very fun and frivolous game. It's got a lot of whimsy, and it's very simple to learn and teach and play. It lasts about a half an hour or so, and up to 6 players. It's great.
I love it. And Andrew, when you are with your gaming acquaintances as opposed to your non-gaming acquaintances, what do you like to play?
Oh man, this is a game. Terra Mystica. It just came out. What's called a Euro game. So after World War II, there was a lot of stigma against war games in places like Germany. So people started developing these games that were more, they had different kinds of themes instead of just tanks and soldiers and stuff. So you develop games that are, people buying power factories, or the Stone Age is a game where you're putting your workers on the map and trying to feed them and build up your economy. Terra Mystica is a big, beefy, stale Euro game where you're trying to build up an engine to get more points.
Wow, so that's the leave that one to the professionals.
Andrew and I are going to get along just fine. Yeah, Terra Mystica is one of my absolute favorite games from last year. It is more complex. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving pieces, both literally and figuratively, in that game. But it's a good, deeper strategy game that can really make you sort of think about how you want to play. There's, again, one of those sort of games that has 10,000 paths to victory. Which path are you going to take?
And remind us again, what do you mean by a Euro game?
A Euro game, you think it's easiest to talk about it in terms of sort of the traditional American game, Risk, sorry, Monopoly, things like that, which, again, as I explained earlier, has, elements that are more luck-based, more race to the end, not a tremendous amount of decisions. Euro games games or Euro-style games are games that originate overseas and have become much more popular in the past 15 years and much more, you know, people know about them more. And they tend to have a sort of a loose theme, but a general mechanism where you have lots and lots of ways to usually score something called victory points. And the game is going to have an end condition that's not necessarily I got to the end first, but, you know, okay, the game ends now. And now once the game ends, then we count up the number of points that we've been able to acquire during the game through whatever means we deemed necessary through our own style of play or reacting to the other players, and the high score is going to win.
We're talking about board games. When's the last time you played a board game? What is a favorite board game of yours or your family? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Brian Winter, owner of I'm Bored Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about board games this hour. We're talking about the popularity of board games from the classics to some newer ones. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest. We're welcoming your experiences. What are your favorite board games? Why do you like playing them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Brian Winter owns I'm Bored Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin. Bobby in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Yes. Do you have a question or a favorite game?
Yeah, I actually grew up on board games. I was I sort of started with Puerto Rico and Dominion, and sort of moved up to playing Magic the Gathering on a semi-competitive level. and that's probably one of the best sort of board games that has so many different facets right now. It's sort of expanded a multiplayer format called Commander, which you can include everybody in.
And that's, you're talking about Magic.
Magic the Gathering, yeah.
Yeah. And so what is it that you like about that?
Magic is a really complicated game. I like how heavily in-depth you can get into the rules and the you can have so many different strategies to defeat your opponent or opponents if you're playing with more than one person. It's a little hard to get into because there's a bit of a monetary investment. But just with basic decks, you can have some of the most interesting games I've ever played.
Well, thank you for calling, Bobby. I know my nephew was a big Magic fan.
And it's one of the most popular games in the world. Actually, Hasbro, which owns the company that makes Magic, reported that in their quarterly statements, Magic is really one of their actually top breadwinners, earners, and all their toys and things like that. Magic is a super, super popular game. It's a card game where you are each a wizard and you have a deck of cards which represent your spells and you're trying to sort of knock each other out. He mentions that it's a very complex game. True, but it's only as complex as you want it to be. I mean, I can, you know, kids play Magic as young as 8 years old. And yes, in order to get sort of that long game, big strategies and finding the right cards, because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of different ones that you can build your own deck of cards and then we fight each other. It's a game that is complex or as sort of, you know, pick up and play as you want it to be.
Is there a Magic 2 or a game? A card game that is challenging the popularity of Magic?
It's no. there probably won't be a game that actually challenges the popularity of Magic. It's on such a high pinnacle right now. However, there are a number of card games that sort of approach the same sort of thing. Now, one of the things with Magic, it's a collectible card game, and he talked about a monetary investment. I mean, it is a game where you buy the cards like you would baseball cards, and they're rare cards and common cards, and there's a secondary value and things like that. A new movement is to sort of take that same concept of building a card deck and fighting each other, but taking the collectability out of it. There's a company in Minneapolis called Fantasy Flight Games, and they have a series of what they call living card games, which is you can buy a core set, and then you can buy add-on packs, but there's no collectability. And so you can buy the same pack that everyone else buys, and you have the same cards that everyone else has, and then you can do the same sort of game. They have a number of games that are in that category. Star Wars is a very very popular one. The most popular is a game called Netrunner, which, at least for my store, is unbelievably popular.
Before we run out of time, do you have any suggestions for party games?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Party games are another sort of segment that has really evolved over the years. You know, I mean, you think about in the 80s and 90s, the party game was Trivial Pursuit. And let's talk about Trivial Pursuit. Trivial Pursuit is only fun for the one person who knows all the answers. And it's a game that has what we call a lot of downtime. And downtime means you're sitting there waiting for someone else to get done with their turn. So someone earlier mentioned Apples to Apples. Apples to Apples really sort of broke that mold. It was the first game where everyone is really involved all the time and doing something all the time. And it's a great game, and it's opened the door for a lot of other sort of some copycats and some, again, take that great system and give it a little twist. Two that I like a lot. The one came out it's by our North Star game called Say Anything. It's essentially the same kind of concept where someone is the judge, but it's all open-ended opinions, and everyone writes down an open, you know, I have, if I'm the judge, I'm going to ask a question. In my opinion, what's the most overrated band of all time, or what's the best reason to jump out of a moving car? And everyone's going to write down what you think I think that is. I'm going to secretly vote on my favorite answer, and then everyone else is going to vote on which answer they think I picked. So it's this your opinion of my opinion of your opinion game, and it works really, really well.
I played that one
it's
time. That was
fun.
That
it's
was
the
fun.
Party game of choice at my house. Yeah. A new one this year is by a local celebrity, John Kovalik, who also worked on Apples to Apples and things like that. It's called Roffle, or R-O-F-L, and it sort of takes this thing where you're trying to get someone to guess a phrase or a statement, but the clues that they're given are essentially like texting. You know, you want to get it's sort of this name that tune kind of aspect. You're trying to get them to say, tomorrow is another day or something like that, but using the fewest number of syllables or characters or words as possible. It's a great new game in that genre.
That's funny. And I was just thinking of the last time I played Trivial Pursuit, and somebody was just taking forever to answer the trivia question.
There are
like
very, very few trivia games anymore because they just sort of fall out of favor. And the ones that are around tend to be very themey. There's a one that I like a lot called Geek Out, which is, geek culture, comic books and sci-fi and things like that. But it adds a little challenge where you can sort of try to one-up each other. Name four Batman villains. Okay, I can do five. I can do six. I can do seven. Okay, you do that. You know, it's another good twist on the trivia genre.
Well, gosh, we have so little time. Hope and Wausau, what did you want to recommend?
The Redneck Game of Life.
Oh, yeah, that Redneck Life. Yeah, it's a roll and move, good old fashioned kind of board game, but it has a lot of whimsy and it's a very silly game.
Yeah, and Victor emails, I discovered a game that was very popular in Europe in the 90s called En Garde. Apparently,
fencing game. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds neat. And boy, there's just so many people who want to weigh in, and we're out of time here in our final minute. Brian, why don't you give us a little pep talk? Why should we consider getting a board game for this cold week that's ahead?
A couple of reasons. I mean, simply because it's a great way to get together with family or friends or both, it's a bit cliche with me now, but you know, unplug, interact, and reconnect. It really is what we're all about. It's a great way to sort of open the gates to reconnect with your family or your friends and just have some fun. And not stare at a screen all day long.
Well, this was fun, and your enthusiasm for board games is catching. I'm looking forward to the next time. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brian Winter is the owner of I'm Bored Games and Family Fun in Middleton, Wisconsin, and we've provided a link to his website on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, so check it out. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Christy Taylor and to Robin Cherry for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.